Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
And you're very welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. Andy Dunn joins us in studio with one of Liverpool eye on tonight's game as well. Try and keep yourself in the moment here, Dunner.
Try and focus.
And Keith Wood joins us on the line as well. Good evening, Keith.
Hi, Richie. I have a Man United eye on proceedings, which means I've been suffering very heavily as of late.
We really should have pre-recorded this, shouldn't we? Just in hindsight, it would have been possibly an idea to let you to kind of suffer in silence, or possibly let your family suffer around you for the duration of these 90 minutes. But regardless, we're here to talk rugby. And I suppose begin our look forward to the Heineken Champions Cup final, which we now know will be comprised of Leinster and Saracens on May the 11th in Newcastle. Keith, I'll start with you. Were we surprised by either of the finalists? I don't think in this studio we were.
Well, of course, I tried to say that we'd have an Irish final, so I am totally surprised. No, I wasn't surprised. I thought Leinster were phenomenal on Sunday. I just thought that they played incredibly well. They were at their best, actually. And I think they've been a bit up and down, but still winning all year. But they hit all their markers on Sunday. They just played very, very composed, very clinical when they needed to be, did really well. For Munster, it's funny, if I look back on the last, that's three semi-finals in a row, right? So we forget sometimes that that is a very serious achievement. Of course, we and everybody in Munster would want them to be getting to the final and winning finals. But I would have thought, and I did think, that the manner on Saturday of performance was significantly higher than it had been last year in France, or 2 years ago against Saracens in the Aviva. I just thought Munster looked better, but I thought Saracens, that is easily the best Saracens have played this season. They were clinical at all stages. They played with a very high level of pace, both in attack and defence. And I think we've ended up getting the two best teams in the competition in the final. It doesn't always happen that way. But I think they comfortably are the two best teams.
Mm. I mean, you look at that game, the Munster one, to look at it, first of all, in terms of stats alone, like 100% lineouts won for Saracens and scrums as well, but they're numbers that were matched by Munster. And these are things that can kind of get lost in the maelstrom of thinking of Munster of losing three semi-finals in a row. As you mentioned, the performance has been a marked improvement on last year's and definitely of the year before as well. I mean, they're obviously happy enough with the progress they've made under Johan van Graan, so much so that they've offered him a contract extension that he's obviously signed. They're happy enough with how the team is progressing. What is it going to take to progress to a final, to beat a Saracens in the semi-finals? I was reading Peter O'Reilly's match report on Sunday morning, and he was saying that, like, even with... if Joey Carby and Keith Earls had been fit, there mightn't necessarily have been the ability to get them the ball that would have seen them do their best work on Saturday. So what is it going to take for that Munster side to make the next step?
Well, I think if you look at Munster at the moment, and I don't think anybody would like this comment, but I think they're almost overachieving. They have, I won't say limitations on how they play, but if I looked at that game again on Saturday, I would say that the way I would like Munster to play is the way Saracens play. And that's, they play with their forwards integrating all the time with the backs running off 9 or 10, all running from depth, crossing the gain line, making the ball an awful lot faster. And that's a fantastic way to play. And it's also an incredibly hard way to play. And when you suddenly look at the quality of the players that Saracens had and had on the bench, Munster are not at that level, you know, and so they need other players to come through the system. They may need to get their hands on a couple of big heavy hitters from overseas, which, you know, leads to different criticisms that happen. But if you were to say that Munster team, even on paper, matched up with the Saracens team, they didn't. And Saracens played incredibly well. So I thought Munster were having to look for Saracens to not hit all their markers, to struggle somewhat, to have their 10 having an off game. Mm. But as I said to you, that is the best I've seen Saracens play all season. I thought they were a pleasure to watch if it wasn't against an Irish team.
Andy, would you go along with that? Munster have been and are overachieving to a degree?
I find it frustrating watching them at the moment because I think they have a stronger personnel this year than they have in recent years. And obviously they're missing Keith Earls and Joey. When they're at full strength with Joey at 10, with Keith back in, with the addition of Tyburn, I would love to see them decide on a style of play. And if you think about Munster historically, the great sides, the ones that won Europe, had a very definitive style, and it was probably territory driven. Mm. Raj was would give a tactical masterclass, you know, in terms of strategic kicking and territory, and then a very strong line out and scrum, very very aggressive forward pack. But they would squeeze teams a lot initially with territory. Then you think of the great side of like 1978 that beat the All Blacks. And, you know, the criticism for Tony Ward was there at 10. The praise for him was the opposition didn't know what he was going to do. The criticism was his own centres didn't know what he was going to do. So, you know, if you look at, say, the great sides that Munster have had, they ran in different ways. The Munster side of 78 was run by Wardy, which is very instinctive. The size of O'Gara at 10 was very, very strategic and very domineering. Now, I think right at the moment, 13 has some kind of it's a bit vanilla middle ground in terms of how they want to play. I played against, I never beat Munster, and I'd say I had 12 games against them, and I always felt squeezed for time, squeezed for space. I always felt like this says probably more about me, but I would end up making stupid decisions deep in our own territory because we needed to get out, and I felt choked. And I don't think this side are doing it. The stats Woody mentioned there, or you mentioned, sorry, around scrum and line out, but Sarri's absolutely dominated the territory battle as well. Mm. And Munster, I fear, are, they've just not quite got that identity. And I spoke about this a couple of months back, and my fears were allayed when they went and beat Gloucester back to back, and I thought, right, they've got it. But they didn't. They did too much, too vanilla, like too much in front of the Sarri's defence. They weren't penetrative. They didn't have a strong tactical kicking game. So they're kind of falling in between two stools, is what they want to be. Because I actually think they've got improved level of personnel and quite good quality. Maybe not the depth Leinster or Sarri's have, but they've got quality. I'm not sure they've got the right identity for that group yet and how they want to play. I know Jerry Flannery and Felix went down to New Zealand in the off season, and they came back saying, "God, there was such simplicity in what they saw in terms of how it was coached. It was highly skilled, but that's not quite transferring through either. And maybe there's cross wires, or maybe there's different views from Van Graan and the two boys that came back, or they just fall back into line as seasons do because they've got to back their own head coach and all that." So I think there's just a bit of a grey area. It's all a bit cloudy for them in terms of how they want to play and execute.
It is going to be an evolving of approach, Keith, essentially, is what's going to hopefully get them to the next phase.
Yeah, I don't know that Andy and I are necessarily disagreeing with each other in terms of that. When I look at it, and you talked about some of the teams in the past, and if you go back to 10 years ago, and this is, you know, part of it. The Munster team of 10 and 12 years ago were the cornerstone of the Irish team. And it's what Leinster have at the present moment in time. Munster had, not to the same extent, but they had an awful lot of really, really good ball carriers. You know, in Anthony Foley, Alan Quinlan, David Wallace, they were extraordinary ball carriers to get over the gain line. So for me, Munster not getting over the gain line against the really big teams. Against the other teams, yes, they are. I do think we missed Joey Carberry a lot. I think he has given an idea of that maybe unknowable or unknowing quality, Andy, that he can play to plan, but he plays an awful lot of what he sees in front of him. So, look, this is a criticism because Munster, or not even a criticism, this is a reflection of what happened at the weekend. I thought a lot of the Munster players played well, but not enough to get over the gain line to make the ball fast. And at different times in that game, I thought Conor Murray played well, and he's been a bit slow coming back from injury. I thought he played well, but he was digging for a lot of ball, and a lot of the ball was on the gain line or behind the gain line. Whereas when you watch Saracens, everything was fast. And actually, when you looked at the following day, the integration of forwards and backs to get over the gain line for Leinster and for Saracens was quite stark for both. And that wasn't happening for Munster. And the game is very hard if the ball is slow. If you're not running onto something, it's slow. So there's very few of the Munster forwards are really taking the ball at pace from depth. And if you looked at Saracens in particular on Saturday, their big forwards, I thought Michael Rhodes was, I thought he was extraordinary. I thought he put in a performance of heavy carrying, of support running, of huge grunt in defence. It was a great game to watch, but not great when you're a Munster fan. It just, you know, and yet Munster were in the game. And suddenly there was a turn of the dial for 20 minutes at the start of the second half. And I think at that stage, Munster were blown away.
Wherever you happen to be watching us this evening or listening to us as well, you can get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or text, and you could be in the running to be named our Heineken Star Comment of the Week and win some of our off-the-ball branded goodies. While it may not have been a surprise lineup for the final, Andy, what we do have is potentially the best possible final we could have. But is there also a worry that given the nature of how both teams play the game that we could have one cancelling out the other or vice versa?
I don't think so. No, I think it's going to be a bit of a humdinger. I think even listening to Sexton was very instructive straight after, I suppose, an overdue performance for him, which, he's had a poor 2019, but he was back to his excellent best. And I thought he signified that by just brushing off the one kick straight into touch. He just showed his experience, didn't bother him, put his hand up and apologised, and everything else was flawless. But when he spoke after the game, he just spoke with this kind of, even for him, he spoke at a higher level, a gravitas about this fixture, about the biggest physical battle of their lives. As a spectacle, that's going to be exciting. Whether they cancel each other out in terms of line breaks or physicality, the physical battle itself alone, I think, is going to make it pretty exciting to watch. So I don't see it being a dud fixture where it becomes dull. Mm-hmm. I can see it being outrageously physical. I watched a video. I actually saw it kind of by accident. Didn't find it by design or research, but it was a Dai Young coached Wasps team about 6 weeks ago, absolutely dismantling the Saris scrum. And it just gave me pause for thought that, I think it's an area that I was really surprised John Ryan and John Klein, whether they didn't go after it on purpose or it wasn't an instruction from Munster. But as a tight head in second row, they look to have a very, very solid scrummaging platform, one of the best in Europe, and they didn't really seem to go on the attack, and Munster didn't play that territory game. But I think it would have been a great way to try and unpick Saris, and I would be of the opinion that John Fogarty, Leo up in Leinster are going to have to find some chinks in that Saris group. And that video, the Dai Young coached Wasps side dismantling the scrum, I think there was Vincent Koch was playing, but they'd probably start with Lamos Ataylee in the final. But I would think they would go after that. And
is there any particular way they went about it, or
well, how
that you can describe on like in terms of how they?
No, I'd wouldn't. I'd love if Woody saw it; he'd know more about it than me. It just looked very destructive, and Saris crumpled. And it certainly looked like they went through the tight head side. But that'll be about the depth of my knowledge on it. But I think Leinster will have to try and find one or two chinks. And I, as a purist watching the game, if you can make the scrum hugely important in the European Cup final, I think it could be a huge sway in the result.
Yeah. Keith, you wanted to come in there?
No, I didn't see that. I was just really looking forward to Andy trying to give a blow-by-blow account of the technical.
I know my limits, Woody. I know.
Yeah, look. I know I lose the run of myself and try and talk about out halves, but it was solid, but also there was just a huge amount of pressure in it. It almost seemed to be a stalemate scrum time at the weekend on Saturday. I just wanted to touch on that game coming in the final. I think the final would be compelling, even if it negates to some degree. I think when you have, you're going to have the two lines, tens, You know, that have toured with each other, know each other's games very well. You have a lot of players there that have played at a really, really high level. When you get to a final, when you get to that level, you're playing it. You raise your game to bring it to the top of your game. And I thought they brought their top games to the semi-final. So I think it'll be compelling either way, because these are teams that are used to playing in finals and they're also used to winning them. So that often doesn't happen, that you see the teams that have won the last number playing against each other. So, I'm looking forward to it. I thought Johnny Sexton, just to talk about a 10 for a front row forward to talk about him, I thought he played incredibly calm. And the one thing we'd say that from that Munster game before Christmas, he hasn't even looked calm. He's looked under huge pressure for whatever reason since then. He wasn't stuck in the face of everybody. Not every pass was a do or die pass where he opened up his ribs to get smashed. He played it in time, you know, which you kind of want a guy in his early 30s. He's not 22 anymore. You want him to be able to see around corners and see everything that's going to happen. And I thought he orchestrated the game incredibly well.
Speaking with our Ireland hats on, I mean, you mentioned Conor Murray actually had an improved performance for Munster on Saturday. To hear the way Sexton's performance went down with both of you on Sunday as well, it's a real encouragement to think that a halfback partnership that wasn't necessarily playing together a lot heading into the Six Nations has gotten that out of their systems and is now starting to show a bit of form, and it could well be useful come autumn time. We've had a text in from Brian in Dublin saying, think Leinster will look to move Saracens around a lot, stretch them across the pitch, keep the pace very high and attack wide. Keith, would you go along with that?
I think you'll find that Saracens are pretty fit as well. I think the big difference that you had playing against Toulouse, I thought Toulouse suffered heavily by not having Entomac at 10. Dupont got on well, but he's not a natural 10, and there's a bit of magic with Entomac. He was obviously injured, heavily strapped. Plus, 6 days previously, that Toulouse team had played the most brutal game of rugby.
That game, Clermont had to have taken it out of them.
Yeah, and I just, like, when we're looking at these things and we're looking at the best games that we're going to see in Europe, they need to get that right. You know, so the French clubs and the English clubs have gone for a big change. We've had it for the last number of years. All it is doing is putting the players under pressure. You want to see the guys at the absolute top of their game. You don't want to see them shattered because one of the biggest games of their season is the week before. You'll end up having them playing huge match after huge match after huge match. So it's like, let's see who's standing at the end after the crazy number of games that they play in their championship. And you don't see the great games at the end. So I thought they ran out of gas. I also don't think they're anywhere near as fit. The French teams are not. Even though Toulouse are a little bit fitter than the others, they are not as fit as either Saracens or Leinster. And Leinster looked sharper and sharper as the game went on.
I know the TV money is completely at odds with what necessarily Pro 14 would be getting. Obviously, the French TV deal, most recent one as well, Canal Plus, is just insane money. So obviously it dictates what sides are playing for what, etc., etc. But surely there would have to be some kind of consensus when you see how their side have performed in Six Nations, when you see how their sides have performed recently when it gets to the business end of the Champions Cup, that they have some kind of consensus across the league in the same way they would do across the Pro 14, where they go, listen, these guys are going to be made available and these guys aren't.
With the national side, do you mean?
Well, with the national side, and also prioritising European competition over the top 14, because going hell for leather, getting 90 odd points in the game across the two sides between Clermont and Toulouse doesn't serve anybody brilliantly. It's a great spectacle at the moment, but you know, ultimately, what are Clermont and Toulouse going to play the season with?
It's, you know, it's a long, tragic story, because professionalism in Ireland has suited us so well because we were smaller and we centralised contracts, and it was, in hindsight, the smartest decision the IRFU ever made, because initially there was talk about Cork Constitution, Young Munster, Shannon being the professional sides, you know, and God knows where we'd have been, because I don't think we could have fulfilled 10, 11 sides. So we consolidated, we did four teams, we did it really well, and France, obviously much bigger country, and had not the choice to do that, but as a result, they've a much more soccer-like setup with multimillionaire owners, and you had
the likes of Mohad Altrad come in and buy Montpellier and buy Jake White, and Jake White brings in, I covered a game, my first ever game with News Talk, I covered with Dave McIntyre. There were 17 South Africans, 11 South Sea Islanders, 28, and then there was a couple of others smattered around the world. Out of 43 on the Montpellier roster, there were 11 French players. So how is that sustainable for the national side? So how are they going to find any kind of clarity and direction for their national team when they've got little silos all working owned by angry little multimillionaires who want to win the cup, you know, for their own joy, and I think nobody's making any money out of it. So I think they're in a really awful place. And then when you, I kind of, my heart started to sing this year when Toulouse revisited their bygone spirit, and they brought back Reggie Son, and they started to play really exciting rugby. And you turn up on Sunday, enthused as I was to watch this game, and they've the starting, they've the French 9 and 10, and they've dropped the 10 and put the starting French 9 into out half. And I just put my head in my hands and I went, Jesus, here we go. Like, yeah. Why would you not play DuPont and Intermac, 9 and 10, starting for France in the European Cup semi-final? Thomas Ramos was under huge pressure. He made two clanger mistakes, I think, because he had to do all the kicking duties and the restarts, because Intermac, your French out-half, sitting on the bench. And it kind of beggars belief. So I'm getting so frustrated, because I love French rugby. And it's so frustrating to watch that demise. I don't know where they start in terms of trying to solve what's going on, because the domestic tournament is their priority. They're not, they don't have to release internationals. Half their team are not French. You know, they're marquee players everywhere, getting best paid players in Europe. It's a mess.
Keith, save us from Andy getting worked up about French rugby, will you?
Yeah, it kills me though.
Yeah, it is a frustrating thing to
watch.
No,
I can't. I suffered the same. I'm a big French rugby fan, but it's of the 80s and 90s, which probably belies my age. But look, I think Entomac was injured, and maybe for the fact that he wouldn't be able to kick properly, and they were hoping it would go their way. I still find it hard to put a 9 into 10. You can put other guys into 10, but 9s into 10 make it quite awkward. I felt for them, actually. I thought it was funny. I spoke the previous week to a couple of guys, and we were having a discussion. I said, look, I can't see Toulouse winning that game because of the game that they had on that weekend, and because of what Leinster have playing at the Aviva. I just didn't see it. It required Leinster to turn up and play well. They played incredibly well. And so it just, like, they could have scored more. It could have been a bigger score. It would have been kind of unfair in many respects. But I have a higher level of frustration in that the amount of pressure that that the players are being pulled, you're pulled left, right, and centre for all the different matches that are happening. I think it's pretty tough. I think it's a difficult situation. I think rugby's in a hard spot at the moment. So there's a lot of commercial plays going on. And a lot of those plays can bring more money into the game and may be able to make the game sustainable. But it may come to the point where the players will get less money than they're getting now, making certain that they're not playing the extra number of games that they're playing now. And that's a very difficult one too, because you're trying to say to guys that, listen, you're going to have to cut your salary somewhat, and nobody ever wants to hear that. Doesn't matter whether you're in rugby or in any job, nobody wants to hear of the salary being cut. But as it stands, it's fairly unsustainable. And yet the pressure is on to have more games, to have to heighten the level of competition in every competition to the highest level possible, and something has to break. And for me, to see Toulouse, who I thought, look, I'm entirely with you, they've been a breath of fresh air. The joy at watching them play this year, of having a cut, of not really worrying about things too much, still being able to deliver, and a team that has a pedigree and a history of the Heineken Cup, who, even if they don't get as much money from it as they do for their home league, they love it because it puts them at the top of the tree, and that's what they want to do. To see them not being able to be at 100 miles an hour on Sunday is a pity. And I think they would have been able to beat most teams in the competition even so, and it required Leinster to be at the top of their game to be able to beat them.
Keith, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for taking time out to speak to us tonight. We'll let you get back to watching the United City game, which is scoreless at the moment, we should mention as well, so you haven't missed much. And Andy as well, thank you so much. I know you're going to be part of our commentary team at St James's Park on the 11th of May for that final. It's going to be live and off the ball, and one very much to relish, and one that I'm sure we'll look into in further depth as we approach that fateful day on the 11th of May. And don't forget, our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everybody in. More from us after this.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.